There's an idea that came currency a while back, and it pops up again every now and then, that the Brahmavihara is a complete path to nibbana. All you have to do is develop one or four of them, and that's all you have to do to gain total release. The idea came from a scholar who was reading a sutta in the canon, where some Brahmins come to see the Buddha. They ask him, what is the path to union with Brahma? And the Buddha teaches the Brahmaviharas, unlimited goodwill, unlimited compassion, unlimited empathetic joy, unlimited equanimity. The scholar said, and the Buddha wouldn't have taken them to an inferior goal. So when he talks about union with Brahma, he must mean nibbana. In the case, all you have to do to get to nibbana would be to develop the four Brahmaviharas. This is a secret, he said, that's been kept, been hidden away by those horrible monks who have been passing on the Pali Canon. But there's so much in the canon that goes against what he's trying to say. There's that famous story where Sariputta is visiting one of his old students. The student had wandered away from him both physically and spiritually. He gradually came back, and as the student's approaching death, he asked for Sariputta to come and see him. Sariputta comes. He reflects on the fact that this student is a Brahmin, and Brahmins aim at union with Brahma. So he teaches him the Brahmaviharas. The student follows along in his mind, and he is reborn after he dies in one of the Brahma realms. Sariputta goes back to report to the Buddha, and the Buddha chided him. Why did you leave him in an inferior goal, he said, when there was more to be done? And you look at the Brahmas in the Pali Canon, and they're always a desirable group. There's the great Brahma and Deacon Nigaya One, who after the universe begins to evolve again after having been destroyed, is the first to come down into the new universe because his merit runs out, not because of any great merit on his part, but because his old merit is worn out. Apparently he was up with the formless realms. He finds himself in an empty palace and he gets lonely. He thinks, wouldn't it be nice if other beings came? And just then, other beings from the formless realms run out of their merit and they come down. He thinks he's created them. They think he's created him. So there's a lot of delusion in the Brahma worlds. There's the hypocritical Brahman Deacon Nigaya 11, the one where the monk asks him, how far do the four great elements go? And the Brahma says, I am the great Brahman, knower of all, seer of all, father of all, creator of all that has been and will be. And the monk says, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, where do the four elements end? And the great Brahma repeats again and again, and finally takes the monk by the arm, pulls him aside, and says, look, I don't know. But my adoring retinue here thinks I know everything. It would be very discouraging for them to find out that I couldn't answer this question. So he sends them back to the Buddha. And there's the Brahmin, Majjhima Nikaya 49, who has obviously been duped by Mara, who hides out in his retinue, into thinking that he's eternal. So you wouldn't go into union with these Brahmas. So the question is, when you do the Brahmaviharas, what's missing? Because the Buddha does talk about developing the Brahmaviharas as a theme of concentration. He talks about how if you pass away while developing the Brahmaviharas, you can be reborn in the Brahma realm. There's one passage that seems to indicate that focusing on unlimited goodwill would correspond to the first jhana. Focusing on compassion would correspond to the second. Focusing on unlimited empathetic joy would correspond to the third. Focusing on equanimity would correspond to the fourth. But there's another where the Buddha talks about developing each of the Brahmaviharas with directed thought and evaluation, with no directed thought and a modicum of evaluation, with no directed thought, no evaluation, with enjoyment, with rapture, without rapture, with enjoyment, with equanimity. Let's take you to the fourth jhana with any of the four. But that's it. So the question is, what's missing? There's one passage where the Buddha is giving advice to Mahanama. Mahanama has been near the Sangha for the rains retreat. Now the Buddha is going to be going off on a walking tour. Mahanama comes and asks him, "A wise noble disciple is on his deathbed. How do I counsel him in your absence?" And so the Buddha recommends that he first ask him if he's worried about his wife and children or anything else in the family. If so, you tell that person, "Okay, you're dying now. You can't be responsible for these things. Focus your mind on dying well." The next question is, are you worried about abandoning human sensual pleasures? And if the person says yes, you remind that person there are higher sensual pleasures in the different heavens. He talks about this pleasures going up through the various levels of heaven, and finally gets to the retinue of the Brahmas. But then he doesn't stop there. He says, the retinue of the Brahmas still has self-identity. This is where you identify with any of the khandhas. So there's still passion, there's still ignorance. Let go of a sense of self-identity. That way you bring the dying person all the way to release. So that's one of the things the Brahmas have that they need to let go of, self-identity. You don't let go of self-identity simply by doing the Brahma Viharas. You have to contemplate the aggregates that make up your sense of self. Because it is possible to hold on even to equanimity. As the Buddha said, it's one of the highest of the clingings, but it's still a clinging. There's another passage where the Buddha talks about previous lifetime, when he was a king, Makadeva. Makadeva ruled righteously, and then when he saw his first white hair in his head, then he gave up his kingdom, gave it to his son, went out into the forest and practiced the Brahma Viharas. As the Buddha said, the Brahma Viharas took him to the Brahma worlds. But they did not take him into dispassion. They did not take him to disenchantment. They did not take him to release. So again, the Brahma Viharas on their own don't induce dispassion. The desire to let go of everything. There's still things that you cling to. Your sense of yourself as the meditator, your sense of yourself as the Brahma. So there's more work to be done. So the Brahma Viharas are a good focus for concentration. Some people find them more congenial than the breath. And if you're one of them, go ahead. Develop thoughts of goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity in all directions for all beings. But remember, those practices can take you only so far. There comes a point where you have to start analyzing things. This is the message in another sutta, where a man comes to see Venerable Ananda and asks him, what is the door to the deathless? And Ananda says, you can focus on the four jhanas, you can focus on the four Brahma Viharas, three of their formless realms. And as you get your mind into concentration with each of these, then you reflect on the fact that this concentration is fabricated. Whatever is fabricated, you see it in line with the three perceptions of being inconstant, stressful, not self. It goes into variations on inconstant, stressful, not self. A disease, a dart, alien, empty. In other words, look at the state of concentration itself in terms of the five aggregates, in terms of whatever other fabrications you might think of. And see, that's not worth holding on to. That's when you let go. That's when you gain release. That's when you gain the dispassion that leads to release. Now the question comes up, what about another practice that's said to take you all the way, which is following the breath? Well, again, the breath can take you into concentration, but the way the Buddha describes the steps of breath meditation take you further. There is that passage where Arita says to the Buddha, I too practice breath meditation. The Buddha asks him, what kind of breath meditation do you practice? Because Arita doesn't have a very good reputation in the Pali Canon. Or just as I let go of thoughts of the past, don't hanker after thoughts of the future, and I'm equanimous about whatever arises here in the present as I breathe in, as I breathe out. And the Buddha says, well, there is that kind of breath meditation, but that's not the one type that will take you, that will yield great fruit. So what does yield great fruit? Well, it's the 16 steps. And the 16 steps culminate in contemplating inconstancy, contemplating dispassion, cessation, release. So that contemplation is built into the way that the practice is described, which is what makes it a complete practice. As John Fung said, the breath can take you all the way to Nibbana. On its own, it can't do that, but if you do it in the way the Buddha recommends, analyzing the breath, developing the breath, it can. So try to recognize which practices are complete, which ones are not complete. And the ones that are not complete, it's not that they're bad, it's simply that there's more to be done. When you keep that in mind, then you don't get deluded. You can enjoy the concentration and realize it's there for a purpose, not to be enjoyed on its own. You enjoy it for the purpose of going further. So do your best to go all the way.